Okay, good morning. This is the first day of Human Anatomy, Bio 231 at Cypress College, and it is Monday, May 18th, and I'm just announcing that because I record my lectures, and so this is a little recorder right here, and you'll get a copy of the syllabus probably later this week, or you can get it online. There's a little provision in there that you have to respond to if you wish for me not to record these lectures, and if you don't respond to that, then I have your implicit approval to record lectures and place them on the internet so that you can listen to them anytime from any place in the world, which is pretty handy. Okay, so we got a couple things to talk about right off the bat, and that is we have a number of students that need to add the class, and we are not giving out add codes. I can't give out any add codes in lecture, only in lab. And it's only a very remote possibility that you can get an add code at this time from the lab instructor. So that's what you really have to do, is find a spot in lab, because the lab is really what is rate limiting in this particular class. You see that all the seats are filled up in lecture, and it's even tighter in the labs. So that's the only way that you can get into this class at this point in time. Okay, so the other thing is that we can only have officially registered students in class and lecture. So if you're not officially registered, I'll take maybe a couple questions, but I can't give out add codes, and I can't invite anybody to stay in class that's not officially registered. And what you have to do is show up to the lab and get an add code from a lab instructor, and I don't know of any lab instructors that are giving out add codes at this point in time. So, sorry that we don't have more room to accommodate more students, but we just don't. Does anybody have a quick question about adds? Basically, it's just probably, it's not very likely that anybody will find an add code in this period of time. Yeah. For pharmacy? I do not know. I know it's a prerequisite for human physiology, but I don't know about pharmacy in the nursing program. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Maybe, maybe. Okay. I would double check with the instructors, but my guess is that all the classes are closed. Okay, but I would double check with the instructors. Which one? Oh, 230? 230? I don't know if we will ever offer that class again. Yeah, 231 is probably all closed up. I'm sorry. I'm not sure about the prerequisite for pharmacy. Okay.
So, as far as you know, and probably Tuesday, Thursdays, all the same boat.
Same boat? But, you know, I would maybe persevere a little bit and
right.
Just see.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So we got to make room. Hi.
Is there an easier way to try to get in this class? Have you been trying to add it for a while?
Oh, yeah. There's almost no way to add the class at this point in time.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay. Good luck. Okay. So along with coming to lecture and lab, we do have an added benefit in these particular sections because we have Sandy White, who is a supplemental instruction leader, who will then offer supplemental instruction outside the normal lecture hours as well as lab hours. And so I want to turn the board over to Sandy for just a little bit, and she'll orient you with regard to supplemental instruction.
And statistically speaking, this class, 50% of you will either drop or fail. So supplemental instruction is designed to facilitate group studying. We do things like worksheets and games and activities that help you interact with the information. In addition, this year we also have skeletons and bones and things of that nature in the room that we'll be able to use. So that'll help you have extra time with those things, be able to get those going on for you. Let's see. It's free. and it's voluntary for you guys, so you don't have to come to all of the SI classes. Dr. Gilbert.
Guess what? You know, it's not free. It's free to you, but it does cost somebody a lot of money. So just because it sounds like it's free, it's not really free. So take advantage of it.
Thank you very much for pointing it out, because I do like to present things that way too.
Is there any other time for that?
I am willing to work with you guys. If this doesn't work for you, 12:30 to 2 o'clock Monday and Wednesday, which is a half hour for lunch after this class, or 40 minutes, and then right into it for an hour and a half. If any of you in here cannot work out that time and have a different time that you would like to see it at, my email address is up here, and I'll be happy to work with you. I do have a lot of availability, so I'm pretty flexible this semester. So definitely email me if that absolutely doesn't work for you. Are there any other questions? You don't. It's voluntary. You can go to one session if it works for you, two sessions, a couple of weeks a month, whatever you like to do. SandyWhite64@yahoo.com. I'm sorry, I should have written that a little larger. I've done lots of biology.
But are you going to do this for
the SI for other? No, I'm not. But I do know the people who are doing them for micro and physiology. Yes, they're also offered for that, and the instructor for those classes is awesome. She's fabulous, extremely intelligent, and very gifted. So definitely take advantage of those too. Is there any other questions? Yes. The only time you need to make an appointment, actually you can make an appointment or walk in for anatomy tutoring, which I also do, but that's done in the library through them. But this SI is done at this specific time. And do you know where the LLRC is? Is everybody familiar with that? It's the bottom building in the library building? Yeah. Okay, excellent. Any other questions?
My pleasure. Thanks. We're very happy to have you. A lot of times in a class like this or many other classes, you can learn a lot more from each other than you can from your instructor, your lecture instructor. So I certainly encourage people to form study groups and to get together and form a community. As long as you get together and don't horse around too much, you can learn a lot from each other. Okay? And Sandy certainly will help facilitate that. Get to know some people in your lab sections, for instance, so that you can get together and study with them. Okay. Let's see, what else did I want to... Oh, first thing right here, here's a sign-in sheet. Please sign in with your last name in the correct little box. Just keep passing that around and you'll be able to track it down through the lecture today somehow. Okay. I do have another handout for you right here. Ooh, should have maybe passed this. I'll talk about this in just a little bit. Yeah, I'm just going to start. Take one and pass it up. Pass them sideways a little bit and just pass them to the back of the room. Okay, I'm going to talk about some materials that are required. Required material is the textbook. Okay, so I don't know if any of you have ever logged on to Blackboard, but this class is a web-enhanced class. And so on the internet, via a virtual classroom that we call Blackboard, you can get all the lecture notes, you can get homework assignments, answer keys, study guides, as well as the syllabus. So I've logged into Blackboard, and I haven't loaded any of these on the desktop right here because you might actually like to see how one goes about and uses the Blackboard site. Under course information, on the left-hand frame over here, you see, you can print out the syllabus, the weekly study plan, which is going around the room right now, lecture exam study guides, and also the lab practicum study guide. So these are all things that will provide copies for you, but if you ever need these during the semester, they'll be available to you. So if you see that the 231 syllabus right here is an executable command, because when you put the cursor over that line, what happens to it? It changes into a little hand symbol. So that means if you click on that, that will do something. All right, so the best thing for you to do probably is not just to open it up, but to actually download it and put it on your computer. And does anybody know how to, instead of just opening it up, actually issue some other kinds of commands, like save the target as? What would you do?
Right-click.
Yeah, you right-click on it. You guys probably know a lot more about computers than I do. But so anyway, I'm going to use the right-hand mouse button, which is not the mouse button that you normally use. Right, and so it's going to say just open a new window or save target as. That's probably the one you want to do. Click on that, and it's going to download it, and then it's going to ask you, where should I put it? Well, what should we clutter up today? How about the desktop? Let's put it on the desktop. Okay, then you say save. It's downloading. There it is. You can open it, and in the title, it tells you what kind of file it is. What's a .doc file? Microsoft Word file, right? Okay, so that's going to open up Microsoft Word for us. And here we have the syllabus coming up. So this will become all second nature to you. So here's the syllabus that has all the pertinent information in the class. My name, my email address, telephone number. I have a website, which I will download the audio files and the text files of the audio file to this particular website right here. My office, as well as the office hours. All right, so this is a little bit mundane, but I do want to go over one thing that's probably pretty important. Notice that my office hours, I have them on Monday, Wednesday, as well as Tuesday and Thursday at different times. And Monday, Wednesday are in my office on the second floor. And on Tuesday and Thursday, I have them in the anatomy lab. So that's really the important thing, because that's just an open lab. You can come in and look at the models. You don't have to interact with me at all if you don't want to, or if you have questions for me, of course, I'll be happy to discuss them with you, right? So you can use microscopes, microscope slides, look at the models. So this is just in addition to the lab that you have automatically. Okay, required materials. You need the textbook. Here's your textbook right here. It is the fifth edition of MIRIB, Human Anatomy. Anatomy hasn't changed in tens of thousands of years, and neither have the textbooks very much, so it might not be real important for you to get the very latest edition, except on the study guides they say that you have to know certain figures, and I give you those figure numbers that are from this edition, and those figure numbers might be different in different editions. So this is the one that I will always refer to, and I don't know how well it will translate to an earlier edition. So if you have a different edition, you'll have to make sure you sit down with this one and yours and see how it correlates, because I don't want you to study the wrong figures. And there's also end of chapter questions that I want you to study, and I tell you which questions I like a lot from this edition, not the previous editions. So those figures and those questions I sometimes lift right out of the book and put on the test. So that part of the exam you can get 100% on if you apply yourself, okay? Okay, so that's one of the things. And as a part of this book, if you buy it new, is this Human Body Brief Atlas. This is real good for bones. You can't buy this book separately. It just comes packaged with the textbook, unfortunately. I've asked the publisher a number of times, and you just can't buy it by itself. So if you see a copy of this someplace, I would buy it anyway, even if you don't have it with your textbook. Okay, the lab manual. Depending on your lab instructor, maybe before you buy it, you want to talk to your lab instructor to see if they will use it. I use it a lot, so therefore I say required in the syllabus right here. These are some other materials that are optional. Histology atlas and another color atlas of the human body. Cypress College picture ID. Everybody should have identification while on campus right here. And if you need to check anything out of the library, you will need a Cypress College picture ID, a driver's license, and any of those other forms of identification just won't work. So please don't, and they are required to ask you for the Cypress College picture ID. So if you only have a driver's license and you want to check something out of the library, don't get mad at the librarians, okay, because their boss tells them to do something a certain way, and they just have to do that. Otherwise, they could lose their job. So don't get mad at them if they're going to ask you for the Cypress College picture ID. And you have to show me sometime during the semester that picture ID when you take a test in here. Okay, not every time, but until I know who you are, you got to show me your picture ID. Yeah.
Does the Fullerton ID count? You have to have a cyber.
Good question. I don't know the answer to that. Let me know. Okay? Because we're sisters' campuses. I'm not so sure. Just they made a real big point to me to say Cypress College picture ID. So double check. Email account. All right, make sure that you have a valid email address entered into Blackboard, because I'm going to be sending out notices and announcements saying when certain things are available for you to take a look at. It might be answer keys for homework or other kinds of assignments. And I will email everybody in the class, and if you don't have a correct email address in there, you'll lose out on that information. All right, here you have the links for the Gateway, which you can access various other kinds of programs, as well as the Blackboard site right here. So, as a matter of fact, how did we get the syllabus? What did we do? Yeah, we went to Blackboard and downloaded the syllabus right here. So you can do all that yourself. Okay, you can read through the college, the catalog description and the objectives of the course and attendance. What can you tell me about attendance? Good luck if you're going to miss any classes in this course, right? There's just no way to pass. So you got to be here every time. If you miss 1 week, then I'll have to drop you, right? So one lab and two lectures or some combinations of those, then I'll have to drop you. But it's probably you'll be so far behind that you will want to be dropped. All right, the drop deadline for with a W, that's for no grade, is November 19th. All right, so what about grading in this class? What do we got? We've got lab quizzes, we've got lab practical exams, and we have lecture exams, which are objective exams, and it's broken down so that lecture is going to be worth about 75% of your grade, and the lab is going to be worth 25% of your grade. And so you just have to look at the schedule, be prepared for all of the quizzes, probably a weekly quiz, unless you have a practicum in lab that day, then you won't have a quiz. And the grading scale is just a straight 90, 80, 70, 60 based on the points. So the total number of points in this class is 1,400. And so you can calculate pretty much where you stand in the class at any time just by adding up your points, dividing by the total so far, and seeing what range percentage that you fall into. So you should be able to know where you are at any point in the class. Academic honesty. Right. This is independent effort unless there are some activities in lab that you will do as a team. Maybe you'll do some dissections as a team, for instance. But all quizzes and tests, including practicums, are just an individual effort. And they're closed notes, closed books. So please don't open up a book or a PDA or anything during a test because you think it's okay to do that. It's really not, all right? It's all the information has to be in your mind. All right, most of this other stuff I think you can kind of read through. Here is a schedule that we're going to follow, and this is for lecture right here. So how many weeks are there in a semester? And you see that right here. So the first column is week number. The second column are the dates. The third column is the topic that we're going to cover that particular day. So, today, what are we going to do? Orientation, right. All right, and you should be reading in your text what chapter. Oh, I should have a little parentheses right here. Chapter. We should be reading chapter 1. And then for the next couple of times, we have chapter 2. Right, chapter 2. So that's how you read that. And then when is your first exam? What date is your first exam? September 10th, that's during the fourth week, exam number one, and the chapters that are going to be covered are chapters 1, 2, 4, and 5, so it looks like we're skipping chapter 3. I wouldn't spend any time looking at 3 before this exam, but it's interesting if you want to look over it. And you see what? We're not going to be covering any material that day in class, so you have the whole class period for that exam. Okay, so does everybody kind of get a feel how to look at this schedule? Overlaid on this schedule, even though this is the lecture schedule, overlaid on it is the schedule for lab practicums. So you see on September 24th, somebody's going to get lab practicum number 2. And September 24th just happens to be a Wednesday, so if you're in a Wednesday lab, that's when you get lab practicum number 2. But if you're in a Monday class, that's not when you get it, right? Because you don't go to lab on Wednesdays. You go to lab on Mondays. So you have to see when you get lab practicum 2. Ah, for the Monday class, it's going to be what? September 29th. All right, so just follow around with this schedule and you should be doing pretty good. Here is the tentative, and this is a tentative schedule. It might change during the semester because every class is a little bit different. Different students, different holidays, people have different questions. I like to change things up a little bit, so you got to come to class to stay in tune with the real schedule that we're on. Right? So this is a tentative schedule. Question way in the back. That's a lab practicum that you will have in lab, not lecture. But I just put it on this lecture schedule right here as a cross-reference so that you don't get caught unawares of what's going on. Okay, does that answer your question? Yeah, so anytime you see that P right there, that stands for a practicum. That's in lab. So for instance, a lab practicum, we might have some eyeballs or brains or hearts on a table, and you'll have to label the parts of the eyeball or brain or whatever, right? So that's what a lab practicum is. Or a microscope. You might have to say, what are the parts of a microscope? Things like that. Okay, as opposed to a lecture exam, which will be multiple choice and matching and labeling. Okay, but I won't have any eyeballs or brains in lecture for tests. You have to go to lab for that. Yeah. Okay, yeah, how do you get, I already logged in, I kind of circumvented that. The question was, how do you get to Blackboard? Well, to get to Blackboard, okay, here is the website for Blackboard. It's http://, notice it's not www, it's immediately cypresscollege.blackboard.com, and I would guess on the home page, or someplace on the Cypress College website, there should be a link to Blackboard. But they just started a new Cypress College webpage. I don't know if it's activated yet. All right, so on Wednesday, I will give you a hard copy of this syllabus. But if you want to get started, which is a good idea, go to this one right here, and you have to put in your student ID number, starting with that silly symbol, that ampersand, and then all of the numbers, and then your password. The password that you use for WebStar, I think, will work. Try it, and if it doesn't, I can change it for you next time. Okay, and as a matter of fact, today after class, if you want to practice logging on, we can practice right here on this computer and see if we can get you signed on. Okay, and I can change your password. And then in Blackboard, double check your email address. Make sure it's not Cypress Student, because you will never get anything at that email address. That's the default one that's in there. All right, change it to the one you want if it isn't the same one that you entered in WebStar already. Question in the back. There's a sign-in sheet that says username and password, and you just type those in and then hit enter, and it will take you to this particular site. As a matter of fact, it will take you to a menu that has all the courses that you're taking that have content in Blackboard. You might have more than one course that has content in Blackboard. So Blackboard is just a virtual classroom where instructors can put activities in, like I'll put videos in there for you to look at, and other kinds of things as well. Okay. The downside to Blackboard is that I can't put really big files. Like the audio lectures right now, they're about 15 or 16 megabytes, and Blackboard has a cap of 8 or 9 megabytes, so I have to put them in a different location, but I'll put links in Blackboard. Yeah? You have to use your Cypress College account. Yeah, your student ID number, starting with that ampersand symbol. All the numbers with the ampersand. Okay? Okay, so straight grading scale 90, 80, 70, 60. Please read through all this information. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to discuss that with you. And then this very last page right here is a tentative laboratory schedule. And you can see that Monday is not the same kind of class that you have on Tuesday is not the same lab as Wednesday, is not the same lab as Thursday. That's just the way it goes. Because on Monday you have what? Two holidays. So the Tuesday class has got two review sessions during those times. It's really handy. The Wednesday class misses out for some reason. Oh, they have... Okay, they get one review session. And the Thursday class, of course, doesn't meet on Thanksgiving Day. So all the labs are different, so they're on their own pace. They're on their own schedule. Okay. All right. So who's got a question so far? Anybody have a question so far? Your final is going to, the lab is going to be over by finals week. So your very last day in lab is going to be your last practicum. But the final and lecture will be during finals week. And that is December 15th. Okay, so that's during finals week. You'll be way done with lab by that time, the week before. Yeah. Yeah, let's take a look at that. So here we have the schedule. So exam 4, what chapters are on exam 4? 13, 14, 15, 16, and 18. And then exam number 5, what chapters are on that? Starting with 19, okay, through 24. So it is not cumulative. It's only these chapters that you see in parentheses right here. Okay. Okay, so you can see you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 chapters on the last test. All right, but these are small chapters compared to muscle, which is a huge chapter. So I forget which chapter muscle is, but it's probably in here someplace. Oh, no, maybe it's up over here. Okay, so not all chapters are the same length. Okay, so that's how I would read this particular schedule. All right, so I'll leave that up there. I'll go back to Blackboard. I want to say one thing about this as well. So how would you get this weekly study plan? Right click, save target as, clutter up the Blackboard, the desktop right here. I'll put it in the right folder in a little bit. Okay. What does it say right here? What's the first statement? Success is not an accident. Okay. In this class, you have to study a lot. A lot of people think that if they don't have a plan, that they might succeed. But you know what? If you have a life without a plan, you do have a plan. What's your plan? Failure. Right? So, just be aware of that. So, make sure you have a plan. You need a plan. So, read through this statement right here. But basically, for a college-level class, you should study 3 hours outside of class for every hour you are in class. Right? So, that means in this particular class, if you add up all the hours that you're in class, multiplied by 3, you should be studying 18 hours a week outside of class. All right? Going to SI, that can count to that 18 hours. And so what I have right here is just a schedule, Sunday through Saturday, and morning, afternoon, evening, and night. Right? You can actually write down the number of hours that you plan to study that week. During those particular times. So this is just a proposed study. So I put some numbers in here how to break it up. Notice I have no study period longer than what? 1.5 hours. Because your brain will fatigue. And you can study, but guess what? You won't learn anything. So it's inefficient to do it that way. Break up your study periods into smaller sections. Next to the numbers in parentheses here, today or tonight, I want you to figure out what your schedule is for the upcoming week. Right, just write it in on this piece of paper right here, and then as the week progresses on the second table down here, actually write in when it is convenient for you to study during those days. And then compare the two. And the next week, what should you do? Print this out, do it all over again. Okay? And then I would like you to total your hours up per day and then per week and see how you're doing. And then figure out what your grade is compared to how much you're, how many hours you're studying. So if you're getting an A real easy, guess what you can do? Maybe you could study 17 hours a week or 15 hours a week. Or if you're not getting the grade you need, you might figure out, well, guess what? I might need to increase this from 18 to 20 or something. But talk to me or your lab instructor or the SI leader and maybe we can cue you in on what to study. All right, so this is just feedback to you to do well in the class. That's what this is really all about. So if you come in and see me or your lab instructor wanting information on how you can do better in the class, make sure you have your weekly study plans, week one, week two, week three, and we can analyze that and look at all that information and go from there. All right, so that's available for you to download all the time. Okay, I'm not going to talk about all this stuff today. This lab practicum study guide, you're going to get a copy of this in lab. That's this right here. This is all the stuff that you have to know, all the structures that you have to know for the lab practicums. You'll get a copy, but if you need to print it out for yourself some other time in the class, it's up here on Blackboard. And then we have lecture exam study guides right here as well. So this is all under course information. One last thing I want you to start working on. Look what I clicked on, assignments. All right, here's another technique that can help you do well in the class. Go to the pre-lecture homework assignment, which means what? You do this homework during lecture? After lecture? Before lecture. All right, so here are some nice, easy questions. You should sit down with these pre-lecture reading assignments and try to answer them while reading through the material that hasn't been presented yet. These are really low-level kinds of questions, but will help you get oriented for the information that I'm going to present in lecture. And you'll become a little familiar with vocabulary and some key concepts so that when I say something in lecture, it will already make some sense to you. All right, so you'll be so far ahead of the game if you do the pre-lecture reading assignments that students find that very beneficial. And there's only like 10 or 11 questions on these. So what would you do? Come over here and do what? Right-click, save target as, print it out, download it, print it out, or if you want to work on it all in your computer, some people don't have paper anymore. They're completely electronic. All right, if your mind thinks that way, that's great. Just put it in your computer and answer those questions. And then what I will do, I will then put the answer keys for you. But right now, no answer keys. So you have to apply yourself a little bit. All right, so that's assignments. Course documents, what do we have? Lecture slides. Okay, so I would go to these and print these out and bring them in because these are the exact text files that I use in class. And I had them photocopied for you, but they got lost in the mail someplace. I don't know, I'll probably have it on Wednesday as well as the syllabus, unfortunately. But by Wednesday, you should have access to Blackboard. If not, see me during my office hours or after class. Make sure you can get into Blackboard to have access to all of this information. Okay? And again, you don't have to print it out if you work on a computer. Okay? But when you're in class, don't let me catch you surfing on the internet, pretending that you're actually working on anatomy notes or something. Right? So don't sit behind a computer screen and text message or whatever you can do on a computer. All right, so this is for anatomy. So I downloaded this one already. How would I do that? Right click, save target as, and I think I put it on the desktop. That's Blackboard. All right, so that's most of the information. Oh, the other things that you'll have right here, of course, if you go to control panel, you'll have your grades too, probably that evening after you take a test. So I won't show you that. I can maybe show you that later. So anybody have a question on Blackboard? Maybe you haven't looked at it yet enough to know that you have a question. Okay, so you have two homework assignments tonight. Let's just kind of recapitulate where we stand. The two homework assignments. What's the first one? Yeah, the study plan. Fill in your study plan. And then the second one is the pre-lecture reading assignment. I would like for you to do chapters 1 and 2 because today we're doing 1 and next time we're going to start chapter 2. Okay, so that will get you ready for Wednesday. Okay, so let's start talking about some topics. Introduction. Maybe I'm going to close some of these other windows out. Okay, so we're going to start lecture right now. And this course is, yeah, thank you. Yeah? You could type it in if you want in your computer. You know, I would like to see that you're doing it sometime, but I don't collect it and grade it. It just helps you prepare for lecture and the tests. And sometimes I take those questions off of the pre-lecture reading assignment and put it on the test too. Okay, so if you can check the key, but I would actually, if you do print it out, when you walk into class, show me. Well, I actually did the pre-lecture reading assignment. Okay, but I won't grade it for you. Unless you want me to grade it to see your answers, that's fine. For sure, check the answer key. Because you might have a correct answer, but maybe it's not exactly the way I would answer the question. So it's a good idea that you understand exactly how I think, because I'm the one that makes the tests up. So it's good for you to get that feedback. So I'm happy to look it over for you. Okay? All right, so we have a couple terms right here, anatomy and physiology. There are three core courses for our nursing program here. One is anatomy, the other is physiology, and the third one is micro. But anatomy and physiology are really what I consider the primary sequence courses. They have to be taken in a certain sequence. Like, we take anatomy first because that gives us a basis understanding for physiology. And as a matter of fact, anatomy is a prerequisite for physiology. Please don't take human physiology without passing this class, because it will be too difficult. And if you take a physiology class, I recommend that you take a chemistry class too. Pass your chemistry first. I know sometimes it's hard for you to appreciate that you should get all that done before you take physiology, but if you want to do the best you can do, which is usually the case, make sure you take anatomy first and a chemistry class before physiology. Okay, so what is the difference between anatomy and physiology? Anatomy is a scientific study of something, and physiology is a scientific study of something else. They're related, but they're really different. Anatomy is the study of structure, how we are put together. And you'll notice a lot of symmetry in anatomy. For instance, if I have five fingers on one side of my body, what do I have on the other side? Five fingers. Not necessarily guaranteed that to happen, right? But that's a pretty normal case, right? So that's structure. And we're going to learn, for instance, the structure of the hand, because what does the hand allow us to do? A lot of amazing things. We can grasp things, right? We have a written language. We can hold a pen or a pencil. Because, not that we have five fingers, but the special arrangement of the fingers, in particular, the thumb, right? We call that an opposable thumb. Like dogs and cats, they have five digits. These are what we call digits, but none of them are opposing. They can't really pick things up and manipulate them the way primates can because of that opposable thumb. So if you have a special kind of structure, that gives you a special kind of function, and that's what the study of physiology is about. It's the study of function. And really, in order to appreciate function, we got to know what the structure is. What are the special structures that then allow us to perform certain kinds of functions? So we first start with anatomy, which is a study of structure. And there are many, many structures in the body that have certain special functions because they have specialized structures. Right? And humans have a very advanced language skills because of the structure of our oral cavity, right? And the muscles that control our tongue and breathing and things like that. And so when we start to study muscles and even bones of the oral cavity, people that are interested in speech pathology, you want to pay special attention to that, because that gives people special functions in terms of communication and articulation. All right, so these two studies go hand in hand. But if we're going to simplify them into their basic form, anatomy is just the study of structure, and physiology is the study of the function, but they are related to each other, right? You can't have one without the other, but a good place to start is with physiology. All right, so what are some branches of anatomy? Here are a bunch of branches. We have gross anatomy, and what's that? That doesn't mean disgusting. It could mean disgusting. But that's one thing that you'll learn in an anatomy class, is that a certain concept might have a number of different names, or a structure might have a number of different names. right? Like, you probably have a number of different names, depending on your friends and circumstances. I go by a bunch of different names, depending who's calling me what, right, at a particular time. So gross anatomy is the study of anatomy that you can see with your naked eye. You don't need special equipment to observe it, right? Like a nose, ear, eyeball, a femur, okay, major bones, major parts of the brain. You don't need a microscope or anything like that. So gross anatomy just means big. Gross in this sense means big. And that's mostly what we're going to be studying in this particular class is gross anatomy. Initially, though, we're going to study some microscopic anatomy. Guess what you need in order to study microscopic anatomy? Microscope, right? You're going to be looking at things that are so small you can't see them with your naked eye. You need magnification to see them. So histology, or if you're going to look at cells, which is cytology, you will need a microscope to do that. Developmental anatomy, that's how a person's body changes from conception to death. And we don't spend a lot of time with developmental anatomy in here, but nonetheless, it's still interesting because we change, right? Every day of our lives, we're actually changing quite a bit. What part of your body is growing until the day you die? You actually have two parts. Your ears and your nose are growing all the time. They don't stop growing. Other parts of your body do stop growing, but they rebuild themselves every once in a while. Embryology, that's from conception to birth. We are not going to study a lot of embryology in here either, but that's a very important part of anatomy because that's where a lot of birth defects come from. And so, of course, we want to be very interested in what's happening in the fetus or the embryo. Surface anatomy is interesting. We'll do this some. For instance, you might point to a certain part of your body, like your elbow, that you bang all the time. Okay? And you should know what's in that elbow right there. Anybody know what that little thing is right there, that bony thing that you bang all the time? That's called the olecranon process. And very close to the olecranon process is an ulnar nerve. That's the thing that really hurts if you bang it. All right, so surface anatomy is kind of fun because you get to relate to deeper structures in your body. And that's one way that you can find yourself around inside your body or know why it hurts if you misbehave. So we'll do a little bit of surface anatomy. Systemic anatomy is real important in this class because the way that we organize our study is first we start with something really, really small, which is what kind of anatomy when we look at something small? Yeah, cell or microscopic anatomy. So we're going to start with something small and then add to it and add to it until we get to gross anatomy. And once we get into gross anatomy, we'll start to study anatomy of the human body by its organ systems. So we'll study muscles as a particular system, and then bones, and then the nervous system, and then the urinary system, and then the respiratory system. So systemic anatomy means that we're going to take a systematic approach or a system approach to learning anatomy, as opposed to maybe cross-sectional anatomy, which I don't have on this slide. Cross-sectional anatomy is if we were to take a slice across somebody, know all anatomy in that one particular slice, which would include muscles, bones, nerves, digestive system, maybe a respiratory system, a little bit more complicated. That's probably not a good place to start. Okay, but later on in your careers, you'll be able to do that, not in this class. And cytology and histology are just parts of microscopic anatomy. Cytology is the study of cells, and when we put a bunch of cells together to form a tissue, that's what we call histology. Okay, so these are some branches of anatomy and the ones that we're going to look at. So there are a number of different levels of structural and functional organization in the body. So if you're going to look at something pretty complicated like the human body, what's a good approach? Maybe what else is kind of complicated? Well, my budget, right? How am I going to pay for car insurance, gasoline, all this kind of stuff? How, when you have a big complicated project, how do you begin to understand how it all works together? What's a good way? If you've got a big complicated project, you break it down into smaller pieces. Right? We call those building blocks. So building blocks are real important. That's a very nice theme in this class, in a physiology class. So we'd like to start with something simple. And The simplest thing that we're going to start with here in anatomy is the cell, because we're all made up of cells. So that's the smallest element in anatomy. And then we're going to add cells together, and we put a bunch of cells together. That's called a tissue. Okay, and the interesting thing about tissue is that there's only four kinds of tissues that make up the whole body. And you see them there. So if you point to some part of your body, I would be able to tell you exactly what tissue it is. And it's either epithelium, or it's connective tissue, muscle, or nervous tissue. So already, I think you might be getting an impression that anatomy is fairly simple. Right? You're made up of only four different kinds of things. So we're going to learn what those four different things are. If we take two or more of these tissues and put them together, we get something called an organ. So for instance, can somebody give me the name of an organ? The heart. Right. So your heart has, what does it have? It has muscle, and it has nervous tissue. There are nerves that go to the heart that regulate it, and it also has connective tissue. So it is an organ. Okay. All right. So after we learn our tissues, guess what we're going to do? We're going to start looking at organs. And so we put a bunch of these tissues together, we get an organ like the heart and bone. Bone has connective tissue in it. Bone has blood. Bone has nerve tissue. Bone doesn't have muscle tissue in it per se, but a bone is an organ as well. And how many bones do you have in your body? Many. You just don't have one bone. Right, so if we study all the bones in the body, then we're actually looking at what? An organ system. So it's a group of organs. Each bone is a particular organ that function together to give you a particular function. And so that's an organ system. And we're going to spend most of the time in this class at this level of organization, organ system. And if we take all the organ systems and put it together, what do you got? You got you, right? The whole organism. So besides of the cardiovascular system, which contains the heart, and the skeletal system that contains bones, what are some other organ systems that make up your body? Nervous system, like your brain and nerves in your periphery. What are some other ones? Digestive system, lymphatic system, let's see, respiratory system, diversification system. Let's see, what else is there? Urinary system. Okay, a lot of different systems. So let me see if I can find a nice slide on this right here. Okay, so here's a nice slide that, again, that shows you the building blocks of how we're going to start with this class. We're not going to start at the chemical level necessarily, though we will have to learn some chemicals as we go along. All right, but if we put a bunch of chemicals together, okay, we can make organelles, which are the building blocks of a cell. And if we put a bunch of cells together, we get a tissue. A tissue is a collection of cells that have all the same kind of function and structure within one part of your body. And if we put a bunch of different tissues together, we get an organ, like this blood vessel right here, because it has muscle and connective tissue. And if we put a bunch of different organs together, then we get an organ system. And if we put a bunch of organ systems together, we get the whole organism. So what we are really interested in is what? The organism right here. But where's a good place to start? Start with something small, namely, okay, the cell. We're going to start looking at cells, and in particular some things that make up cells, like organelles. So that's what we're going to look at next time. Okay, here we have in your book a number of different organ systems. So for the first test, you should kind of look these over, make sure you know what the basic organ systems are, and be able to name a couple organs in each one of the organ systems. Okay, like for instance, muscle system. What's the name of a muscle? Everybody might know. How about like biceps brachii? That's a pretty good one to know. Triceps brachii. Abdominis, rectus abdominis. All right, now here is a good question that I like to ask everybody, especially on the first exam, and that is, what is the largest organ in your body? Yes, your skin is. Okay, so that's an organ, and we don't call it skin, we call it the integumentary system. So the integumentary system is your skin plus a number of accessory structures associated with your skin. So your skin is this part of your body. What are some accessory structures? Your nails, hair, okay? There's some muscles that give you goosebumps when you get cold, and there are glands that secrete sweat and oils and things like that. That's part of your integument as well. So the reason why I like to ask this on an exam is why? Because you've probably never heard of it before, and anybody, a layperson out on the street, has never heard of that before. So if you use that term, you sound educated, and that's really nice for my students, okay, to pick up education when you come to class. Oh, that reminds me of something. In lab, when you have a practicum and you put an answer down on the practicum, it has to be spelled correctly. So spelling is important. It's not so important in lecture because it's a multiple choice and matching and things like that. But in lab, you have to know spelling. So pronunciation probably will help you in spelling. Why do we ask you spelling? Why do we grade on spelling in lab? And the simple answer is, you had a lot of good answers. The simple answer is because this is school. All right, and so you should just learn how to spell these words correctly, like integument or integumentary system. What are some other systems that we have right here? All right, nervous system, the endocrine, oh, I didn't mention that. Endocrine system, that's a good system to know about, right? It secretes hormones that regulate various processes in your body. Cardiovascular system, including the heart and various blood vessels. That's an organ system. Lymphatic system is one that's important for immunity. And the respiratory system, digestive system. We're going to look at all these systems in this class. The urinary system, and of course, the male and female diversification system we're very interested in. So those are some important systems. Okay, well, let's start with some anatomy, definitions of anatomy. Let's see, when did we start? 10:30? 10:30, and we go to 11:50. Okay. Great. All right, so let's go back to this text file right here. Okay, so here are the different organ systems. Your book might have a different number than 11. Various books have different numbers. Sometimes they're combined. In some advanced classes, you'll study not the endocrine system and the nervous system. Sometimes you'll have just one class that covers the neuroendocrine system because they function so closely together that you can't really study them as separate systems. You really have to study them together in an advanced way. Okay? So different books will have different numbers. So this 11 is not something that you should remember, but you should just be familiar with these and give me some organs. Okay. Did I see a question someplace?
Yeah. Are these going to be up on Blackboard?
Oh, they are on Blackboard. Yeah.
They are. Okay.
They're there for you. So you don't have, and probably on Wednesday I'll have hard copies for you for this lecture and the next two.
Okay.
Okay, so those are at someplace between the printer and here. Okay. Anatomical position. All right, it's important to get started with anatomical position because we're going to be working our way around inside the human body. You say, well, go to the right of this or go to the left of that or go above it or below it. And in order to go right or left, the body has to be in a particular location or a particular position in every case so that you have common directions. All right, so it's a starting point. So maybe you're going to join somebody, maybe to shoot some pool later tonight or maybe have drinks or dinner or something, and your friend tells you, oh yeah, we're at a certain address, and you go, okay, and you start driving to that address and you get lost. And so what's a good thing to do after you get lost? Take out your cell phone and call your friend and say, hey, I'm lost, how do I get to where you're going? But what's, can your friend help you with that information? No, because your friend is going to ask you what? Where are you? And if you don't know, then you can't be helped, right? So in order for you to know anything about anatomy, you got to know where you are, the standard body position, and we call that anatomic position. So what is anatomic position? That's when somebody's standing on the ground, feet flat on the ground like that, facing forward with their arms down by their sides, kind of relaxed, facing forward like that. Okay, so but in a relaxed position, notice which way my thumbs are pointing. They're pointing in, okay, and that's not anatomical position. Anatomical position means that the thumbs have to be pointing out toward the sides. So this is anatomic position. So is my little finger on my, this is my right hand, on my right hand, is my little finger to the right or left of my thumb in anatomic position? My little finger is toward the left side of my body, right? That's why it's so important to know anatomic position. Because if I was relaxed, my little finger would be pointing to the right side. And you would get lost if you're going to say move right or left. And you would excise or take a sample from the wrong part of the body if you don't think in anatomic position. Okay? So this is anatomical position. Directional terms. These are kind of fun. Let's see. First one, anterior, posterior. So the front part of your body in anatomical position is the anterior side. It's also called the ventral side. Anterior and ventral in people are exactly the same. In lab, you might learn different things for different animals like cats and things like that. But in a person, ventral and anterior is the same. The opposite position or the opposite side of the body is going to be the posterior or dorsal. And we use those terms interchangeably in anatomy for humans. It's just the way it goes. Okay, superior and inferior. Superior means above, of course, in what? Anatomic position. Inferior means below. So my nose is what to my belly button? It's superior. Doesn't mean better, worse, or whatever. It just means what? On top of, you know, above. Okay. Cranial and caudal are kind of the same terms, a little bit different. Cranial means toward the head. Caudal means towards the tail. Well, you haven't seen very many tails on people, okay, but it sort of means toward that direction. And once you get past the hips, then that gets a little ambiguous, right? But in other animals, that's real important, like for dogs and cats like that, because the most posterior part of a dog is the tail, right? So it does make sense for some organisms, but not for people, but I just put it in there anyway. Okay, medial and lateral. Medial means toward the midline of your body. So if you're going to be in anatomic position and draw a line right between the middle of your eyes, right down your nasal septum, right between your two front teeth, right through your belly button all the way down, that's the midline. And if there is something that's close to that midline, we call it medial. If it's far away from that midline, we call that lateral. So again, we can use fingers again. Which digit, right, is going to be medial? Is it the little finger or is it the thumb? The little finger is medial in anatomic position. So when we use these directional terms, we can't just talk about one structure. We always have to talk about two structures, right, and how they relate to each other. You can't say my little finger is medial. That doesn't make sense. Because medial to what? Belly button? Is it medial to the belly button? No, it's lateral. But to your thumb, it is medial. So when you use directional terms, you always have to use two structures to describe the relationship. Okay, next one. Proximal and distal. This might be the hardest one to appreciate. Again, think of some center point in your body. Okay, and that could be right on midline. As you move away from that center point in your body, okay, you get farther and farther away from that center point, and we call that distal. Right, if something is closer to some center part or attachment point in your body, we call that proximal. So let's think of a couple joints, like your elbow and your wrist. Right, which one is closer to the attachment point to some center part of your body? Is it the wrist that's closer or the elbow? The elbow. So in this particular case, we would say that the elbow is proximal to the wrist because the wrist is farther away to some center attachment point. Or the wrist is what? Distal. It's farther away. And there are a number of places where you can measure somebody's heart rate by feeling their pulse. They're sort of like a blood pressure as their blood is coursing through an artery. We can take a central pulse, right, up in their neck, or we can take a pulse more commonly that's far away from some center point in their body. What kind of pulse is that that's far away? Is that a medial pulse or a distal pulse?
Distal.
That's distal. So a good distal pulse is where? Okay, in your wrist right here. All right, and we're going to know a name for that. That's your radial artery right there, but that's just a distal pulse that's far away from your heart, but it's a really good way to count your heart rate right here. That's a distal pulse. Okay, another term, superficial and deep. Okay, when we look at organs, they're not homogeneous. A lot of times, the part that's on the outside is a lot different than the part that's on the inside. And so we talk about the different layers within an organ. If it's superficial in an organ, it's the outside part. And if it's an inner part, we say that it's deep. Okay, so the integument is what to the heart? The integument is superficial. The heart is deep to the integument. So that's how we would use those terms. Okay, so if you want to dig deeper, well, you got to go deep. Right? If it's right on the surface, it's superficial. All right, contralateral versus ipsilateral. This is a way of referring to how an organ organizes itself in your body. There are some nerves that start on one side of your body but end up on the other side. They cross over. Right? And if that's happening, we call that contralateral. If something is crossing over from one side of the body to the other, it is contralateral. If it's ipsilateral, it means it's on the same side. Okay, so that's how we would use those terms right there. All right, so let's see what we have for figures right here. Oh, these are body cavities. Okay. Okay, body planes. Does anybody know how many dimensions in space that we exist in? How can you move around in space? Somebody said three. I like that. Because you can do what? You can move forwards and backwards. You can move right and left and up and down. So there are three spatial dimensions for moving around inside your body. And so there are three planes that can be used, right, to look at the inside of a person. And the three planes, okay, are sagittal, transverse, and frontal. So I got to show you a picture of this stuff. Okay, so here are the three planes. And let me zoom in. Okay. This one right here that looks like a tabletop is what we call the transverse plane. That transverse plane is going to separate somebody's superior part from somebody's inferior part. And it doesn't matter where this plane is, it can slide all the way down here and separate the feet from, what, the rest of the body. Or that transverse plane could slide all the way up to the top of the head and just kind of cut off the top of the head and separate it from the rest of the body. So that transverse plane, right, just separates a superior part from an inferior part of somebody's body. And the next easiest plane to appreciate is what we call a sagittal plane. The sagittal plane is going to separate a right side from a left side of somebody's body, and it can slide, just like the transverse plane, either right or left. So we could have a sagittal plane just cutting off the tip of the thumb over here. So you can have the tip of the thumb on one side and the whole rest of somebody's body on the other side of that sagittal plane. All right, sagittal has a couple other sub-names to it if the sagittal plane is right smack in the middle, again, going right down through the tip of the nose, between the two front teeth, through the belly button, all the way down, right smack in the middle. We call that it's a sagittal plane, but it's a special sagittal plane. It's called mid-sagittal. So if it's right smack in the middle, mid-sagittal, and if it's off to the side, either the right or left, sometimes we call that parasagittal. That's a parasagittal plane, okay, when it slides one way or the other. And then the last plane right here is called the frontal plane. And what parts of the body does a frontal plane separate? Anterior from posterior. And again, it can slide back and forth depending on exactly where in the body we want to look at. All right, so I'm sure that's an exam figure. And you might have to look at this a number of times. On Blackboard, I'll have to double check, but I have all the figures that could possibly be on the exam with these labels whited off. So you can put those on your computer and practice labeling them in your mind, or if you want to print them out and actually label it on the piece of paper, that's fine too. All right? And if you do that with all the exam figures, what are you doing? You're basically doing the same thing you're going to do on the test, which is even easier because it's just matching on the test. Right? So the exam figures on the test, you should be able to clean. What does that mean, clean? That means get 100% on, right? Not just get like 90% or 95%, but on the figures, you should be able to get 100%, which gives you a lot of breathing room on the other parts of the test that maybe you haven't practiced exactly. Okay, so that is the planes. The other one, so we talked about mid-sagittal, parasagittal, oblique right here. Oblique means that instead of a plane that's either strictly transverse or strictly sagittal or strictly coronal, right, it's maybe angulated a little bit. These basic planes are real nice because a lot of times our body is oriented in a with a lot of right and left symmetry, what we call bilateral symmetry, but a couple times in your body you don't have that symmetry. For instance, what side of your body is your heart mostly on? Yeah, it's mostly on the left, so it's not completely right in the middle of your body, and it's angulated, right? As you go from superior to inferior, there's a couple angulations, but one of the major ones, your heart kind of moves over to the left, so it is angulated. So if you want to do a nice imaging study of the heart, you can't just do a transverse plane or a sagittal plane or a coronal plane. You want to what? You want to angulate it a little bit, and then you'll have very nice pictures that really show, that represent what's happening inside the heart. And that's what we call an angulated type scan or an oblique scan. Okay, so that's an oblique is just a combination of some of the other three planes. Okay, body regions. You have the head, and I think that's what was on this previous slide up over here. Okay, your head is right from your chin to the top of your head. That's not so hard to describe what's going on there. There's a couple tricky parts to it. For instance, the neck is from your shoulders to your chin. That's not hard to visualize either. And the thorax is between your shoulders and a muscle right here. And that muscle you use for breathing, that's called a diaphragm. You can't see it on surface anatomy very easily, but this is the thorax. Below the diaphragm is the abdomen, and then below that is the pelvis right here. Okay, so this region is what we call the trunk region. These are what we call appendages. And the appendages get a little tricky, because between your shoulder and your elbow right here, this is what we would call your, it's not so tricky, this particular part. This is your, between your shoulder and your elbow, that's your arm, right? But between your elbow and your wrist, that's not your arm anymore, that's called your forearm. Okay. It does get tricky in the lower appendage between your hip and your knee. You might want to say leg, but that's not your leg. That's what we call a thigh in anatomy. And between your knee and your ankle, that's what we call your leg. So be familiar with that terminology. It gets a little tricky in the lower appendage. Okay. Okay, so your limbs, you got your arm, forearm, thigh, and leg. Okay, body cavities. Ah, good exam figures here. Okay, so a cavity is a space inside the human body. And what are spaces inside the human body used for? Yeah, put stuff, right? Like various organs, things like that. Okay. And generally, we have two main cavities. And these main cavities can be broken up into smaller cavities depending on how we want to focus our attention. So let me find the two main, oops, two main cavities for you. Okay, so here are the two main cavities. One is in, oh, there's something I didn't tell you guys, which is a little confusing sometimes. And that is, I'm colorblind. So when I look at these slides, I don't know what color they are. So I can't use color to describe to you what to look at. So a lot of times I'll just ask you, oh, what color is the structure that I have the cursor on? Okay, and then just tell me. Don't look at me like I have no idea what's going on. Okay, so like this right here, what color? It looks gold or yellow or something. Okay, all right, so this gold or yellow right here is what we call the dorsal cavity, because what? It is really posterior. It's a posterior part of your body. So this is the dorsal body cavity, and it can be broken down further into two other cavities, namely the cranial cavity and the vertebral cavity. So the cranial cavity contains the brain, and the vertebral cavity right here contains the spinal cord. All right, the other main cavity is what we call the ventral body cavity, right here, and that's red. Okay. And furthermore, we can break the ventral body cavity into thoracic cavity. What kind of organ is going to be in the thoracic cavity? Lungs. The heart is in there as well. Okay, but lungs is a good place to start. And there's a nice line of demarcation right here. That's the diaphragm that separates the thoracic cavity from the abdominal cavity. Give me a name of an organ in the abdominal cavity. Kidney. Well, yeah, close to kidney. Okay, stomach, for instance, intestines, things like that. And then inferior to the abdominal cavity is the pelvic cavity. Give me an organ in the pelvic cavity. Uterus, urinary bladder. Okay, those would be good, some good examples. There is no nice line of demarcation between the abdominal cavity and pelvic cavity. They flow into each other. As a matter of fact, some organs start in the abdominal cavity and end up in the pelvic cavity, and then vice versa. Right, but nonetheless, we talk about the pelvic cavity over here. We'll learn the specific definition when we get into bones. So a lot of times, when we talk about the abdominal cavity and pelvic cavity, since they really are one, we combine these terms together and make up a new term that describes this cavity right here. We would call that the abdominopelvic cavity. So in anatomy, we can take two separate terms, like abdominal cavity and pelvic cavity, put them together and generate a new word, and it's legal as long as we do what? We put an O between them. So for instance, here we have what? Abdominal. And so you have to be kind of careful when you articulate that people understand when you're talking. Abdominal cavity versus what? Pelvic cavity. And if we put them together, let me go with a darker pen right here. Okay, what do we want? We want abdomen-O, not A-L, not L, but O, what? Pelvic. Abdominopelvic cavity, that means putting them together. We'll do that a lot with different parts that are associated with each other. We'll put them together and give them one name. All right, so that's an exam figure. On the test, how are you going to do on this? Yeah, 100%. Okay? And in lab, you're going to be, I think, looking at this as well. Okay. All right, membranes. Serous membranes. A serous membrane is something that lines a cavity that's not open to the outside world. You have a number of cavities in your body that are open to the outside world. And let's start with that. What kind of cavity is open to the outside world that you're familiar with? Your mouth, your nose, okay, are open to the outside world. They have a membrane that lines that cavity, but it's not a serous membrane. It's called a mucous membrane. You have other cavities that are not open to the outside world, which we just looked at. Right, the dorsal cavity, ventral cavity, in particular the abdominal cavity is not open to the outside world. It's closed. So it has a serous membrane around it. Okay, and here are some special serous membranes. If we just look at the heart, we see that it is found in the pericardial cavity. Oh, let me see if I can show you. Let me see if I can find that. Ah, right here. Let's look at this one right here. So remember, if we have a cavity, we can break it down into smaller cavities, right? So the thoracic cavity is where? Starting at the diaphragm, moving superior all the way up to your shoulders. This is the thoracic cavity. But the thoracic cavity contains lungs, and it also contains the heart. So those organs have their own special little sub-cavity that they exist in. And the cavities that the lungs are in are what we call the pleural cavities. So anytime you hear pleural, you should be thinking of lungs. All right? And this cavity right here is where you have the heart. So this is the pericardial cavity, right? Meaning surrounding the heart. And furthermore, coming off the base of the heart, coursing superiorly, you have a bunch of huge major blood vessels that are either bringing blood back to the heart or taking blood away from the heart. And so this is sometimes associated with the heart because they're blood vessels, but it's not really the pericardial cavity. So we make up another cavity that includes these great vessels up here as well as the heart, and we call that the mediastinum. Mediastinum. So a good way to think of the mediastinum is by just considering the following question. In the thoracic cavity, what is the cavity that separates the right and left pleural cavities from each other? It is the mediastinum. All right, so again, like integument, you probably have never heard of that particular cavity unless you take an anatomy class. So what do you think I like to pick on in a test? Not the stuff that you learn on the street, but stuff you learn in class, right? So make sure you know what the mediastinum is. And it's used all the time, right? Because you might have an infant that has cardiovascular problems, right? Maybe they're cyanotic and a mediastinal scan is ordered. Because what do they want to look at? They want to look at the heart and blood vessels to see if they're all connected up correctly and if there's any birth defects in those areas, right? So mediastinum is something that's very important to know. Okay. And here you can see the abdominal cavity and pelvic cavity again. So this is an exam figure, so make sure you can label all of these things exactly. Okay. Now this takes us to the last thing that we were looking at. I got a couple minutes yet. I'll start, remind me to start here next time, but let's start looking at this one. And it has to do with the serous membrane. So a serous membrane is a membrane that lines a cavity that's not open to the outside world. Like what kind of cavity? Abdominal cavity, pelvic cavity, the pleural cavities, pericardial cavity. None of these are open to the outside world, so they have a serous membrane. And a serous membrane has three parts to it. Let's look at this balloon right here. And the balloon is not so filled up with air so that somebody can actually take a balloon and put their hand inside the balloon without breaking it. All right, so going from the hand, right, all the way through the balloon, how many layers of balloon do you have to go through? You have a layer that's right on the surface of the hand, that's one. You have the air that's in the balloon, that's two. And then you have the outside wall of the balloon, that's what? The third layer. So every serous membrane has got those three basic layers associated with them. The layer that's right on the surface of the organ, we call that the visceral division. All right? And then the fluid that's within these two membranes is what we call the serous cavity, filled with serous fluid. And then the outermost, right, or the most superficial layer of a serous membrane is what we call the parietal division of that serous membrane. And there's one of these membranes around the heart, there's one around the lungs, there's one around everything in the abdominal compartment, and everything around the pelvic cavity as well. So these are the three layers. So we're going to look at that. I guess I can show you this before we go. Oh, where's that sign-in sheet at? Did everybody sign in? Okay, just hold it up, and if you need to sign that sign-in sheet, you're welcome to. All right, so we'll start right here next time, but take a look at this. And start working on your homework and your study plan for the week and all that kind of stuff. Hi.
I was wondering, do you have any botanization?
You can try to go to a lab.
Oh,
and see if they're, if a lab instructor might
take petition, but chances are no. And I don't have any to give in lecture at all.
Okay, so